My name's Carla. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm nervous. This is my home group. So anyway, Barb just told me to tell the truth. So now that I'm sober, I can do that. So I'm going to start with my idea of an AA joke, which is I was told there are two times to go to a meeting, when I want to go to a meeting and when I don't want to go to a meeting. So that made sense to me. And the other two things I want to read. I also have to say I love the big book, so I didn't love it when I came in the door. In fact, I didn't dust it off much. But I love the big book, so I'm going to read. So we heard tonight the point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines, which when I came in, I hated myself, I hated you, I was afraid of you, I was afraid of myself. So when I was a newcomer, the whole willing to grow along spiritual lines, I wouldn't even have known what that meant. But I'm grateful that today that makes sense to me. And I'm also glad it wasn't a requirement for coming in the door. So it kind of grew on me. The other thing that I read this morning and that's been going through my head is that as an alcoholic, my hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. And I would add, this is my word, my only hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. So I'm going to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I'll try to keep my drunk log short. I started drinking at 17, and my first, I shouldn't say, I started drinking alcoholically. My family's Italian, so maybe I had a sip of my dad's glass of wine. I didn't like it. I wasn't tempted to drink. I was a nerd in school. I wasn't invited to parties. I would have become an alcoholic much, much earlier if I had been in situations where there was drinking, but I wasn't. To qualify, I did feel different from the get-go. I was asked to be the grown-up in my family. It wasn't a happy or fun place to be, and we were all focused on my mom, my sister, and I. We were all focused on trying not to make Dad mad, so that was the organizing factor in our life. And he was always mad and very moody. And so I grew up trying to see which way the wind was blowing at home and then trying to do a song and dance and entertain people and keep them laughing and try to keep Dad entertained and try to comfort Mom because my dad wasn't very nice to my mom. And my sister reacted differently. I won't tell her story, but she started trying to kill herself at a young age repeatedly, hid in the house so my parents couldn't find her. Slept in the bushes, was at other people's houses, so we reacted differently. So my first drink, I felt like I'd arrived. I was invited to a party. The police came. I went running off, you know, in the night, crawled into the bushes to hide from the police, and then I felt like I'd arrived. School was my place of comfort and where I got positive feedback, so I did really well at school. I liked it. That was how I hid out. One other thing about feeling different, after ninth grade, we moved from Seattle to Atlanta, Georgia. So I was actually told there that I was different. I was called Yankee in the hall. If I sat down at a lunch table, the whole lunch table would get up and move because I was a Yankee. There are also no girls. So that wasn't like a teenage hallucination. I was told, you are different, you Yankee. And also at my high school in Georgia, no girls took math or science or any college prep classes because they were afraid if they were smart, they wouldn't get asked out on dates. So they were nowhere to be found. I also was 5'10 by the time I was 14 and didn't look like a girl, so that didn't help either. When I went, I always say my fun with alcohol lasted a total of 2 weeks, fun with drinking with no problems. So I went to Spain. I was already fluent in Spanish. The whole trip was paid for. They accidentally put me in a male dorm for my study experience in Spain, me and a couple other girls. So I skipped all my classes because I thought I already knew everything, and that's when I started drinking. And the first drink I remember in terms of drinking alcoholically, my second drink, the party got broken up, the first one where I had to escape into the bushes. So I didn't get drunk that night. But in Spain, for about a dollar, I could get a glass that was about 85% rum and a little splash of Coke on top. So that was my drink. The fun was I would go out drinking every night and dancing, and all of a sudden I felt like a girl. I could talk to guys. I could dance. It was fun. I had a hollow leg. So I'd dance and come home, wake up the next day, no hangover, you know, explore Madrid, go to the pool, and do the same thing over again, and no consequences. So as soon as I left Spain, I started having consequences. My college drinking, I went to college in Minnesota, was in the middle of a cornfield. We weren't allowed to have cars. It was an isolated farming town. You know, and I thought my choices were study, which I certainly didn't want to do, do sports, have sex, or drink. And so I picked drinking. I mean, that was it. So when I was at the parties, I weighed 30 pounds less than I do now, and I was keeping up with the biggest football players drinking. You know, and they didn't understand it. And I was there for the free beer. I was not there for a date. I was there to drink. I had a singleness of purpose we talk about here. My singleness of purpose was I was there for the free beer. So drinking was my profession, and, you know, school was just an irritation because I had to keep my grades up so that my parents would keep paying for school. And my dad had a hunch that I wasn't really actually studying, and he actually came to visit me unannounced. You know, he had to come from Seattle to Minnesota. But he would drop in on me, and he would interview everyone that knew me and ask them what I was up to, which was now, I think, is kind of weird. But so he was doing a little spot checking or little site visits. Let's see. When I first came here, I listened for the differences. So if you're new, I would listen for similarities, because I sat in a chair and I thought, I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't drink alone. I was a bar or, in Minnesota, you know, dorm room party drinker. And when I got out of school, a bar drinker. I didn't black out. I didn't throw up. I didn't go to jail. So I listened for all the differences. And so it took me a really long time in these rooms to feel like I heard my story or I could identify. But I am a real alcoholic. And I told my story recently, and somebody came up to me afterward and said, "You are a real alcoholic." I was like, I am, you know. And I'm really glad I'm a real alcoholic and that I got 12-stepped into these rooms. But it took me a long time, over 6 months of going to meetings before I heard my story or before I felt like, okay, I really, really do belong here. My first time I tried to quit drinking was my sophomore year of college. I gave up alcohol for Lent, which my drinking buddies thought was really weird, but I actually did it. But they thought it was very odd and stupid. And then not 6 months later, I gave up drinking to protest my roommates drinking because they were drunk the first 45 days of fall quarter. Every night they were drunk. And I was not an alcoholic because I took Sunday and Tuesday off. So I was drunk the other 5 nights, but I had a 2-night break so I could study. So therefore, I wasn't an alcoholic. So I quit drinking to protest their drinking. And people have heard me say this, but they would lay on the couch, drink tequila out of the bottle, and knit beautiful intricate sweaters and not drop a stitch. So that was drinking in Minnesota. Really wild. So I quit drinking, I don't know, for a month or 6 weeks. And then when I passed all my finals, I was at the airport. And a guy from my college said, you know, he would buy me some drinks. And so the next thing I knew, I was about to miss my plane. And he was literally dragging me through the airport, kind of had me under my arms, dragging me through and kind of handed me over to the flight attendant, like, get her on the plane. So that was after my hiatus from drinking. So the third time... Oh, and I should tell you that my progression in just 4 years was so dramatic that when I graduated, somebody that had met me fall of my freshman year said to my parents, which I didn't appreciate, you know, I don't know what happened to Carla. So I went from being kind of bright-eyed and reasonably cheerful and polite to, by the time I was a senior, very angry, very surly, very arrogant. So I started off, he actually said this to them, she started off wearing little flowery dresses, and look at her now. I had gained 50 pounds. I was wearing a friend's black leather motorcycle jacket. I pretty much had a terrible attitude. One of my parent professors also commented to my parents, like, we don't know what happened to Carla. And my senior year, I only took freshman classes because I finished my major so I could drink full time. And I took them pass fail. So that's what happened to me. So one part of my story is that where my drinking took me was from being a nerd in high school to coming within a hair's breadth of having a mafia contract out on me. And that was the third time I tried to quit drinking. I went to Boston for the summer to stay. My parents were out of the country. My sister was out of the country, and they didn't trust me home alone. So they shipped me off to Boston. And some of you just heard this, but so they shipped me off to my dad's best friend from growing up, and his daughter was into, you know, every drug and drink and guy known to man. And, of course, I thought I was doing really well because all I did was drink, and I was the only one of age. So this is back when the drinking age was 19 on the East Coast. So I bought the alcohol. She had a cousin visiting from Italy. We all drank too much. This was a very thin, very young girl used to drinking wine with dinner. She had 10 shots of Jack Daniels in an hour and had a 0.5 blood alcohol level and almost died. She was hooked up to a bunch of machines. And so I was told to leave the state and be prepared to wait by the phone in Seattle for a phone call. And then if something happened to her, there'd be a mafia contract on me and I would have to, you know, move to another country and have my face redone and dye my hair blonde. So, and I chain smoked the whole time waiting for the phone call, and it was terrible. And I kept thinking, but I'm a nerd. Like, why am I waiting for a phone call about a mafia contract? And I didn't connect the dots that my drinking was part of that story. I just thought it was bad luck. Okay, time to get off my drunk log. So the first time I got 12-stepped, I was a senior in college. So I'm not going to talk about this, but I took the side door to AA, which was that I went to an OA meeting because I drank in public and I was proud of my drinking, but I thought that eating a chocolate cake by myself in my room was really shameful. So I went to OA. And I met a young woman there, and my one and only gray out or blackout was public. And so this girl came and got me in my room and took me to a meeting. She took me to a meeting with, it was all older farmers in overalls, and I didn't identify. But she did 12-step me. I stayed sober 30 days and got a 30-day coin. I didn't think I needed to look up AA when I left that community, and by Labor Day, I was drinking again. So then the second time I got 12-stepped, I was living in D.C., so the problem was not me. The problem was that Seattle was boring and provincial. So I moved to Washington, D.C. I got a job where I had free alcohol 7 nights a week. How I stopped drinking, I had a spiritual experience. I was in my house. It was a Saturday. I had a sip of a mimosa. The alcohol hit my bloodstream, and I heard a voice that wasn't me say, "This isn't working." And I put down the drink. And I knew that I was done with alcohol, or alcohol was done with me, because the minute the alcohol hit my bloodstream, I had the feeling of terror, the four horsemen, impending doom. I knew how things were going to turn out the minute I took the sip of the first drink. I knew what kind of a night it was going to be. I knew what kind of a afternoon it was going to be. I knew what kind of a weekend it was going to be. And that was my spiritual experience. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't go to treatment. I didn't go to therapy. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't do anything. I had amnesia about AA. My sister 12-step me. She asked me why I didn't drink and didn't go to meetings and asked her why she went to meetings drunk. So that was how my sister 12-stepped me. So my journey in AA, the first half is how not to do it. My sobriety date is January 29, 1989. So I started out my first 14 months, I white-knuckled it. So that was, I had the spiritual experience. I put the drink down. I white-knuckled it. I hated everyone when I came in, including myself. When I quit drinking, I hated you all even more, and I was even angrier. I had no anesthetic. I had no friends, and it was, I wouldn't recommend not drinking and not going to meetings, because that was incredibly miserable, and I had no painkiller. My sister 12-stepped me and got me back into meetings. I went to one meeting a week, probably for 6 months. I didn't talk to anyone. I thought it was a clique. I never got called on to share. Then I figured out I could go to more than one meeting a week, so that helped. My journey with sponsors. It's okay to switch sponsors. My first sponsor didn't have a sponsor or work the steps, so I had to switch sponsors, which was a good idea. My second sponsor, people have heard me say this, we don't talk about it here, but there are other life-threatening addictions. So she was a sex addict, and she's out doing that every night, and I was wondering why her program didn't seem very good. I didn't know what she was up to at the time, and I wondered why I was trying to do the steps with her. It didn't work. So eventually I figured out I needed another sponsor. So my third sponsor took this. If you're new, we'd love to buy you one. And we went through it word by word. So that was kind of, I had 6 years when I went through the big book. If you're new, you don't have to wait 6 years. You can start reading it tonight. I love the big book now. I really enjoy reading it. It's part of my sobriety. For me, I had to read the big book with somebody, talk about it, keep reading it, hear about it from other people, and make it my own. So now something happened at work last week that was bad that made me really angry, and immediately that part about with the alcoholic, resentment is fatal, that went through my head. I called my sponsor. She read more parts of the big book to me. It really makes a difference in my life today that I feel like the big book is mine because pieces of it come to me throughout the day. And I haven't sat there and memorized it, but now, I don't know, it's part of my life. It's on my hard drive, and that's a good thing. How I stay sober today, let's see. Oh, I'll just quickly say, because I always skip this in my story, I was an indifferent student at best while drinking. In sobriety, I got to go back to grad school. I got to really do the work. I thought I was going to die my first year of grad school because I studied foreign languages, all of which I think I forgot when I was drinking with everybody else in my class was a native speaker, so I had to make up for lost time because I had a degree from undergrad that said I was a Spanish major, but I hadn't actually read any of the books. So I got to read them all triple time in grad school. I got to do the work. I got to stay sober in a big drinking school. I got to make lifelong friends. I'm still friends with the woman I met my first week of grad school. We met at a women's meeting. We're still friends. I got to be in her wedding. There's a part in a vision for you that says you'll make lifelong friends, so it's true. What else? And now I get to be employable. I get to have a sponsor. I get to be a sponsor. I get to make friends in the program. Today when I call people, they call me back. I'm on my ninth step, and I'm going back and making some really old amends I haven't made. And then I get to bring myself current and make some since the last time I did went through the steps. I do believe in working the steps continuously. So I do constantly cycle through the steps. My fourth sponsor in California taught me to always say that the four legs of the AA stool that my sober butt sits on are that I should always know what my home group is, who my sponsor is, what step I'm on, and what my service commitment is. And that has worked for me. It's not in the big book, but it's been helpful to me. Let's see. I did do a geographic in sobriety. My sponsor urged me not to do it. I did it anyway. I didn't drink, but a couple things happened. I decided that Silicon Valley was too fast-paced, and that was the problem, not me. So at 10 years sober, I put everything in storage and moved to Italy. And my sponsor asked me what my plan was. And I didn't have very much money, and I said, well, I have family and friends over there. It's all going to be okay. And she said, oh, gosh, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Like, what's your plan? You don't have enough money to stay over there very long. And I said, like, oh, it'll all work itself out. And so my family was happy to see me, and I have lots of them, but I decided their village was too boring, so I had to be in Rome where the action was. And I didn't have family there. So I did go to meetings. I got a sponsor. And what happened was I ran out of money. I didn't have enough to eat. I looked like a skeleton. I thought I looked fabulous. And two women in the program, whatever you call it, I don't know, 12-step me about, they said, you don't have any money. You don't have anything to eat. You're not drinking, but this is an untenable position, so you either need to go back to your village and be fed and housed, or you need to go back to America, and you're going to tell us right now what you're going to do, and you're going to do it. And so I followed direction. One of them was my sponsor. And I walked to a phone booth. I had a return ticket. I changed the date, and I went home. So I guess no matter how much sobriety you have, I think you always need a sponsor, and you need to be willing to take direction from people in the program. So I'm grateful that I listened to them because it was the right thing to do. And I did go back home. And now I'm supposed to talk about the topic. And here I am. I moved to Oregon 2 years ago, and I'm very happy to be here. I love the West Portland meetings and John's Landing meetings. I'm really happy to be here. So the topic, I guess, is going to be how I stay sober today. And I'll just read one other thing that I had marked. Because part of my staying sober today is, as it says in the big book, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. So when I got here, I was not interested in being of service to the people about me. I was interested in how you could be of service to me. So that's a change in perspective. How I stay sober today, I start my day off saying, you know, higher power, please help me to stay clean and sober today. Please help me to carry your message. It talks about carrying the message of AA. Please help me to be of love and service. And then some stuff out of the big book about please remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. That's out of the big book. Please help me not to think my thoughts. Please free my thinking from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking thoughts. So I have some prayers I say in the morning, and I am somebody who gets on my knees and says, please help me. Throughout the day, I talk to at least one alcoholic a day on the phone, usually more. And then I don't go to a meeting every day, but many times a week. What else? I read the big book every day, which gets my day off to a good start. Like I said, I have a sponsor. I work the steps. I am a sponsor. I've heard that from an alcoholic, 90% of life is suiting up and showing up. I learned that here. And I guess I get to be grateful every day because that whole, you've heard AA stands for attitude adjustment, and attitude of gratitude will go a long way. So if I'm in a terrible mood, I'll jot down some things I'm grateful for. And at night I say, thank you for keeping me sober. It doesn't matter. I don't need to know who or what my higher power is. I just know I have one and that he or she loves me and is on my side. So I don't have to define it or quantify it or give it a brand name. And I learned that through the program. I'm really grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to this group especially. And I'll conclude with something. A woman who now has about 35 years sober, she was asked by my friend who was her sponsee very impatiently, you know, when do I get to be happy, joyous, and free? And this is somebody who as a child was in a concentration camp in World War II and had a rough go of things. And she said, when do you get to be happy, joyous, and free? And her answer was, from time to time. So I am happy, joyous, and free from time to time, and the times when I'm not, I get to come here and tell you about it or call my sponsor. So thank you.